Welcome, everybody. This is Ingrid Dinder from EFT for Vets, and you are joining a 60-minute introduction to EFT for Vets Taylor Seminar. In order to join us today, you all have given an electronic signature by clicking on a little button that states that you all are aware of the disclaimers. You've read the disclaimers, and you agree with all the disclaimers on EFT for Vets, EFTforVets.com. You know that the call is being recorded. And you know that the recording will be made available to other people on some level or another, and you're okay with that. If you don't want your voice to be recorded, then please just stay muted, okay? So when you speak, it will be recorded. So we have a very, very full program for 60 minutes today. And I had just said in the introduction before we started the recording that I would love for this call to be at least somewhat interactive. There is so much to talk about. This work is very complex and extremely, extremely wonderful in so many different ways. I want to make sure that I get to answer at least some of your questions and not just here being here holding a monologue and not knowing if that helps you in your particular situation. I saw from your feedback that you have very different backgrounds, very different motivations to be here today. So let's just get started and make sure that we can make this as successful and helpful for you as possible. So an important aspect of this class today is something that I found when I started working with veterans that was really important and also hard to find information on, and that is that I found that it is so important how we as EFT practitioners or healing practitioners in any way, shape, or form, whatever we do, how we present ourselves, how we create rapport, how we understand from either an outside perspective as a non-military person or an insider perspective as a veteran or as a military person, how we present ourselves and our work. Because truthfully, if the guys don't trust us, they don't care what we do. We could be the most amazing whatever healers or whatever, however people call themselves. If they don't trust you, they really don't care. So this is the first and really most important thing for me right now to address in this class today. And then we have quite a few other things that I would love to talk about. It is obviously very, very important to mention that EFT, no matter what, does not replace the medical and psychological care. I insist that all the veterans that I work with, because I'm not a licensed mental health professional, I'm a coach, and I offer this work as a coach very clearly in my disclaimers on my website and in papers that people sign. It's very important to me that all of my veterans are in psychological care and receive the medical care that they need. I ask them to ask their providers to okay that they work with me as an additional service, but not to replace anything that they need to receive, especially if they need care for severe conditions, then they need to have that through licensed mental health professional. Just want to make that really, really clear, and you should also always make sure that you check with your state what you can and what you cannot do and really adhere to those laws. It's an important thing to do. Something that's important is that as we talk about this today, I'm going to alternate between using the word soldier, veteran, warrior, maybe troop, service member, or other words, simply to keep the flow of the conversation going. Whenever I use whichever title, whichever word I use, I always mean every service member, any rank, any line of service, whether it's Coast Guard, whether it's Airmen, whether it's the Navy, whether it's a Marine, a soldier, a reserve, active duty, whether it's the medics and the nurses, I always mean everybody, all of them. I honor everybody. Also, I might say he. Naturally, of course, I mean the female service members and female veterans as well. So just to clarify that so that this is understood. To me personally, my name is, as you know by now, Ingrid Dinter. I've been an EFT practitioner for about 9 years, a little over 9 years now. I am I have a background in with other healing modalities. However, EFT is my weapon of choice. It is simply what I do, and I don't use other tools, withdraw from this, because I found that EFT is extremely helpful. I am a registered alternative provider in the state of New Hampshire, and with the Board of Mental Health in the state of New Hampshire. The board has no oversight over my practice. However, I'm grandparented as an alternative provider. And I am also the daughter of a POW, of a prisoner of war from World War II. My father was in Russia for 3 years of his young adult life. I've been in Bosnia and Croatia during the Balkan Wars many, many times with trucks in humanitarian mission, so I have an idea of what it's like to be in war zones when things fly around and when you're not safe and when you have to make sure that you kind of stay out of whatever's being shot around. And obviously, being German, as you might hear from my accent, I was raised in the awareness what war can do to people and what people do in war. We were very, very intensely educated and prepared and involved in what happened during World War II, what Germans did to Jewish people and what Germans did to other people. We went to concentration camps, and we were constantly warned and reminded of our responsibility to make a difference when we can and to speak up when we can, because when we don't speak up when we can, there can be horrific consequences for that. And so part of the reason why I'm doing this is because I feel it's my responsibility. It's just the right thing to do. It's dear to my heart, as you can see. I've also, obviously, some of you know that I've participated in the film Operations Emotional Freedom, in Gary Craig's film with veterans, and it's just what's dear to my heart. What I want to talk with you today about, there's a number of things. The first thing is we want to discuss the current situation in care of our returning veterans. We want to talk about symptoms of PTSD, what that actually means, the way it is explained online, again, not as a diagnosis, but that you get an idea. And I want to tell you a little bit of some studies that we have about the situation as it actually presents itself. We want to talk about what we're dealing with spiritually, historically, and archetypally, and this is extremely important information if you're interested in EFT for vets and the program of EFT for vets, because it's really a heartbeat of it. And I want to share this with you today in this free call. I want to talk about establishing rapport and trust. Again, if the guys don't trust you, they are not going to be able to absorb what you have to offer or even, you know, pick you up on it. Specific issues to be aware of and how to solve them with EFT. Or better than saying solve them, just different approaches, a different way of trying to help. Before we do all that, I want to tell you very, very clearly that even though EFT is an amazing tool, and I've also participated in the research studies where we used a very standardized EFT protocol, and they're all published on the websites, and I've done a lot of things there and published papers there and things like that that you can read up on, there is no cookie-cutter solution. Every person you work with is different. Every veteran is different. Every soldier is different. Everybody's story is different. And it is disrespectful, at the very least, to assume that because we're working with a soldier, we know exactly what that person needs, and then we tell them all about it in the beginning. And I say that just because it's really dear to my heart, because if we don't do that, then we can hurt people, we can insult people, and we make rapport basically impossible. So let's start in the beginning. Let's start in the beginning by saying that the symptoms of PTSD are there are three different groups of symptoms. The first group is re-experiencing. Most of you probably know that, but one of the many ways that that soldiers or veterans realize that something is wrong is that they have flashbacks, that they have intrusive thoughts, that they have insomnia, they have nightmares, they feel like they're back in the war zone, as if they were right in the middle of it all. They have a hard time concentrating because of that. and they just get triggered very, very easily. So it might be they see a color and they just go right back into the war zone. It might be they hear a certain sound, a bang or something like that, even something that remotely reminds them. For some Vietnam veterans, it's the smell of plastic. It can be all sorts of things that make that immediately put them into a state of re-experiencing. So you want to be very, very cautious when you work with somebody, provide a safe environment, and be aware that this is something that might be going on. And just for your clarification, a flashback is not an intense memory. A flashback means the situation feels as if it was happening. Okay, this is really, really different. It's not, I'm really thinking about it and I'm getting upset. It is, it's happening right now. I experienced many times that the soldiers I was working with felt that there were people standing behind me or were pointing a gun on them, or they were seeing a little girl, or they were seeing scenes from what was happening as if it was happening. So when that happens, take it for face value. Don't try, that would be my you know, suggestion. And I forgot to mention, of course, this is not a training in psychotherapy. I'm not skilled or licensed or anything like that to do that. But when that happens, this is where they are. And with EFT, we can pick them up where they are. If that's what they see, let's tap on it. Okay, we don't have to shift that. We can just say, okay, even though I see the blood, even though I hear the voices, even though I'm smelling plastic, even though I'm smelling rubber, even though whatever it might be, even though I see this person, and just tap on it as if it was anything else that is just happening at the moment, and see if that makes a difference very gently, very kindly. Our ultimate goal, obviously, is to not let this happen so that we can work with somebody so much on the outside of their experience, with words that is really pampering on the outset, so that they don't have to think about anything triggering before everything else could possibly be released. The second group of symptoms PTSD consists of is avoidance. Avoidance is any way of numbing emotions. That can be by staying away from experiences that can be triggering, staying out of traffic, staying out of buses, of crowded places. Some people really, they just lock the door. I hear that a lot from parents of our current soldiers who oftentimes have been on multiple deployments. They just lock the door, they don't want to talk to anybody, then they just can't expose themselves. Excess sleeping in the basement, self-medication with drugs or alcohol, obviously is a very typical one. For some people, it can even be something as interesting as excess prayer, excessive meditation, meaning sometimes people, they never allow themselves to remove themselves out of a meditative state. They simply couldn't, because they would be going into a different, difficult place. Obviously, that's a better solution than self-medication, but it's something to be aware of. Hyperarousal is the third group. And hyperarousal basically means that they startle very quickly. To give you an example, for those of you who have seen the EFT for Vets film, Gary's film, you see Andy in there. When Andy and I were in San Francisco, we walked down one of the hallways in that hotel that we were filming in. And at day three, Andy, who is extremely hypervigilant, which means he would never, ever leave the house without something to shoot with or something to stab with or something that he can protect himself with, and hopefully more than one. At least that's how he was back then, and has changed dramatically. He and I walked down this corridor, and the elevator door banged open, loud bang, and I made a jump, and Andy was just kept walking. And I said, Andy, I'm surprised you're not jumping. He said, no, it's an elevator door. Okay, so he realized after the tapping that he was actually in a safe place. This, just 2 days prior, would have literally caused him to be extremely hypervigilant, extremely aggressive, and protect himself. So you want to be aware of that. Want to make sure that you protect yourself and your own safety. When we did our study with veterans, we were not allowed to work with people who were above a 3, which means a medium level, on a scale of a 1 to 5 on the urge to beat or harm somebody or to break things just for our own protection. So you see these three things, and when you realize that how intense the life of these soldiers is, and obviously that avoiding memories and avoiding being triggered is a part of their of who they are. It's a symptom, so to speak, in a non-clinical sense. You understand how difficult it is to actually work with them and to actually get them to work with you, because they have to go through so many things, just through so much. And when we first started really reaching out, it was just stunning to us how few veterans actually wanted to talk to us. And you can talk to anybody. It's so hard, even for those who know they need help, to make a connection. And I just want to give you some numbers for that, because I think it's going to help you understand why we can make such a difference when we approach this healing with EFT from a really, from a civilian, from a kind, from a coaching perspective, from a one-on-one, I'm going to help you out perspective, which is what we can do with EFT. There's a study, just very quickly, it's the first large-scale non-governmental assessment of the psychological and cognitive needs of military service members who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan in the past 6 years. It was published by the RENS organization, RENS Corporation, in April of 2008. And they found that just two numbers that I want you to remember. They found that only about 50% of those, no, let's put it this way. They had about 1.6 million deployed soldiers. They expected about 20% of them to have or develop PTSD, about 300,000. They found that slightly more than 50% of those with symptoms were looking for mental health, only 50%. And only half of those were actually receiving minimally adequate care through the VA. Okay, so if you put that in perspective, about 15% of returning soldiers actually receive minimally adequate care. Adequate care is even less than that. And the, I can give you this chart. When they found out why there are barriers to looking for mental health care, which is available to all of them, 39% of them said, "I feel that my family or friends would be more helpful to me than a mental health professional." Okay, we don't have to judge that. We don't have to have an opinion on that. We can just observe. 39% of them say that their family or friends would be more helpful than a mental health professional. So for the mental health professionals who want to reach out, I think it's also important to understand what it is that makes them feel this way and what can be done within the field of mental health to provide whatever is missing so that they can overcome this and actually reach out for help. The other reasons were that they didn't want to be medicated. Okay, they felt the side effects were too strong. They were very afraid it hurts their career. They were afraid that it were denied a security clearance or their bodies would lose trust in them. And when you look at that, you understand just how profoundly different it is to work with a soldier with a mindset that they would rather suffer through this, through all of their symptoms, no matter how horrendous they are, than let a body down. That they would rather deal with the nightmares and everything else than lose control because they're medicated too strongly. And they would rather deal with everything they're dealing with than harming their career or not having the security clearance. Okay? So this is really strong and it's really different and it might be interesting for you, because I read in so many of your feedbacks that you said, you know, how can we get the guys to reach out? You know, how can they, and we just want to go in, we want to change the world. And I can so relate to that. But I just want to tell you, it's difficult, and there is just a lot to, I just think a lot to know and to how to relate to the soldiers who have been through so much to be able to actually accommodate what they need. There's another study that shows that 98% of returning peacekeepers in this case, it's a UK study, talks to their military friends or peer group, and only 8% to medical services and welfare services, 95% to their spouses. So once again, if we really want to help, we see that it is extremely important for them that the person they work with is trustworthy, is somebody they're comfortable with, somebody that is personal, somebody that they can rely on, and that they know they have a foundation and a basis with. If that isn't there, it is extremely difficult for them to warm up. And I can tell you that it's very easy for a veteran to sit in the session and just fake it for an hour because they don't want to talk. They're going to say anything they want to say, and they're not going to open up, and not for the life of them, simply because they don't trust. Okay, so obviously there's a whole lot more to be said about this, but I would like to open the lines for a couple of minutes and just see what questions you have. 4-star is what's going to do that for you, and I'm just going to take a couple of 3 questions. If you have something, 4-star.
Ingrid.
Oh, yes.
I just wanted to just quickly say that, you know, that trust is a two-way street, right? If I can't trust you, I can't trust you if you don't trust me.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
It's just really huge.
I agree with that, Steve.
And when we were in San Francisco, I did exactly what you said for about 5 days. I skirted the issue. I don't know. You know, there's something familiar and comfortable about terror. I remember you guys accusing me of being having great courage, and I kept telling you that no, what you mistake for courage is actually terror and desperation.
It is terror and desperation. It is terror and desperation. And Steve, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It is extremely important that there's a real relationship between the practitioner and the person and the veteran. It is not something that you can do in an hour, you know, every 6 weeks. There's really something else different going on. Steve, I appreciate you. Thank you. Does somebody else have a question?
I had a question. I'm Sia.
Yeah.
About working, Sia, in Washington,
yeah.
Sia Watson.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Working over the phone, because that's primarily what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any precautions or, you know, times you wouldn't want to do that?
She's a man.
Yes. The most important thing is always safety. If you're comfortable working over the phone and you think it's the right thing to do, and you know that the person you work with has the psychological care and the backup, and they want to work with you over the phone, it's their decision. But, you know, there are certainly people, when you know that somebody is not in a safe place, they need somebody by their side. You know, there's certainly a limit to what you can do over the phone. And so, you know, it's important, especially when somebody is over the phone, that you are not their only resource. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah. Anybody else have a question? There's a loud noise there, so I think, okay. Somebody else have a question? Okay.
Ingrid?
Hey,
yes.
I just wanted to say, is everybody muted except for the person that wants to talk?
Let me take care of that, Steve. I appreciate it. You're absolutely right. If you could be muted, I really appreciate that. There was one more question?
Hi, Ingrid?
Yes.
It's Caitlin Williams in Boston.
Caitlin.
You know what? You might not be able to hear. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. Okay. I was wondering when you first meet a client, do they already know that you have this technique that you're going to use? Have they already been introduced to it? And or how do you introduce them to it?
My guys find me online. My guys know what I do.
Already. So they already have some idea about this new technique or some different thing that you do?
Well, not necessarily. Usually their wives tell them that they have to talk to me, and they don't want to. So we talk on the phone. And what we're going to be talking about in a moment is going to be very important for that rapport. But I would really, you know, when I talk, first of all, I listen more than I talk, because I think that that's really important, and it's obviously different in the teleseminar, but I think they have a story and they deserve to be heard. And I always make sure that our first initial consultation has the time that it needs, because it is hard. I always tell them, you know, you need to check me out. I understand that. Ask any question. I don't even tell them what I do before I ask them what they need to know about me. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I am very aware that if they don't trust me, then why would they care what I do?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first thing I always do. I ask them if they know anything about this and what they need to know about me to establish the rapport. And then I tell them the story that I shared you as well. And then we talk about, I keep the information about EFT very much to the minimum, because
uh-huh.
it really doesn't matter why it works at that moment. I just tell them there are certain release points on your body that I'm going to explain to you, and then you make a certain statement. I give an example. I tell them where to tap, and I show them how that effect is there. When I introduce the tapping, I do that right hands-on, so that I don't have to run into mental barriers and I don't believe in any of this and things like that. Does that make sense?
You said I tell them heads. What did you say? Right hands-on.
Yeah, you know, I'm just. Can I show you something? I usually just demonstrate the tapping before I even talk about it.
Okay.
I just
tap
on the tapping points. Say, you know, there are certain points, and then I tap, you know, on the eye socket points and nose and upper lip, lower lip, and chin, collarbone, under the arm, so they see what I do before I say what I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's helpful. Yeah.
I just tell them what it does is it doesn't make a wrong thing a right thing. But what it does is it takes the charge out of it. And I just tell them, you know, all these things that you suffer from, or most of the things you suffer from, there's not much we can do to change them because they already happened. But what we can change is how you feel about them. And it's enough that it happened. It's enough that it, and in many cases, that things shouldn't have happened, that it was unfair, that it, you know, whatever happened, happened. But you shouldn't have to be upset on top of that. You shouldn't have to suffer on top of that. And there are ways to take the charge out of them so that you can actually use this as a part of your life, and then you can tell others about it. Because as long as you tell, if you don't tell, as long as you suffer, as long as you're in flashbacking whenever you think about your things, you can't really talk about it. And people who need to hear you, they don't know that you have something to say, because you just can't speak about it. And, you know, that's one way, and obviously everybody has their own words, but you get the idea behind
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is really to help them release whatever is holding them back, the negative feelings,
mm-hmm.
that they can open up to claiming this. And they are really the only ones who can tell us about war and about peace.
Mm-hmm.
Soldiers are the only ones, warriors are the only ones who really know what war and peace really mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to hear that lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I want to help them heal or release so that they can get to another place. I don't use the word healing, I use the word relaxing.
Oh, okay.
More grounded.
Okay.
You know, the more grounded, the shorter it is, the better. Let me tell you something really quickly here about this. About what it actually means spiritually and historically and archetypally. And I think you will understand then why it is so important that we have this one-on-one connection. See, archetypally, on an archetypal level, on a very deep, innate human level, which is represents a part of who we are, a warrior is a very, very powerful part of our human development and our human nature that usually comes out in boys around the age 16, 17, 18, and in girls a little bit later. The archetype of the warrior is what the military uses and builds upon to form the soldiers that then are willing to go to war. War itself is a rite of passage. And what that means is that it's like going through a long corridor where you put through training and ordeals that prepare the warrior for a rebirth as a new person with a new status and new wisdom. This is something that all tribes, native tribes, no matter where they are in the world, they understand that. We need, in certain parts of our lives, we need to go through this long corridor and we have to face certain ordeals, and we just have to deal with them, and we have to conquer them. We have to prove ourselves. We are being prepared for this, but then we have to do this. See college as one of them. We have the teachers. We go to a school. We have our teachers. They prepare us. But then there comes this time when we are on our own, and we have to prove what we're made of. If we win, if we make it, we afterwards have a different title. We might now be, a senior, or we might have a college degree, or we might whatever. If we don't, we have to go back and try it again. So this is a really important thing, and war is just like that. Rites of passage are necessary for health and human development, and so in order to prepare the young warriors, what actually happens is that they are getting separated in traditional tribes. They get separated from the tribe into a sacred space by the elders of the tribe. And you see the parallels here, in boot camp, for example. When they're separated, they go to a different location where everything is different. They have no connection to the tribe. And then the elders train and prepare the boys for their new position as a warrior. And they prepare them that there will be ordeals that they test, And they go through certain rituals traditionally, and we do that too, by giving different ranks, giving different insignias and different things, so that we can actually see that a transformation is happening. And the conclusion of this rite of passage happens with a celebration. And during this celebration, the candidate, the warrior, is often renamed, and he gets a new place in society. He's respected for what he did, and gets this new place. Those transformations are never completed in solitude. We must witness for each other, and we have to initiate each other. These transformations become a part of our shared history. The archetype of the warrior, expects, or a warrior expects, that this transformation will develop his character, and he knows that he will face death, and he knows that he will learn how fragile life is. He will be exposed to almost godlike state where he can grant and take life, and he has to put his own life or her own life out there for a higher purpose, for the mission that they're sent to fight. So they are willing to sacrifice their life. This is why you never want to question a warrior's mission. This is the most disrespectful thing you can possibly do. Say, you should have never done this, and this is so messed up, and talk politics. This is one of the biggest shut-me-off things we can possibly do, because the mission is an almost sacred, on an archetypal level, which is deeper level, an almost sacred thing. My buddies died for this mission. I got hurt for this mission. I was willing to sacrifice for this mission, and here people come and they treat us with disrespect. That's not okay. So what we see when we talk about it this way, that warriors really are prepared to go to war. They are prepared to sacrifice their lives for a higher purpose. And they're prepared by elders, and all of these, and they're willing to go through the tunnel and come out on the other side, and that they're really looking for this transformation. You know that they say, we are proud. We're proud of our service. We're proud of proud Marines. Honor and pride is so, so, so very important in the military culture and to every service member. That we can see how that this really relates to the archetypal way of transformation. An important part of this is really the function of the elders. If the one reason, and this is my personal belief, one reason why soldiers develop symptoms is because at some point of this transition through this tunnel, through this rite of passage, something doesn't get finished. Okay, so they literally get stuck in the tunnel, or a part of them stays in where the tunnel is, in Vietnam or in Iraq and Afghanistan, in Somalia, wherever, in Bosnia, wherever they were in the tunnel. A part of them literally stays there. They cannot finish. And one of the reasons is if they are let down by the chain of command, for example, this is a huge trauma. Another one is if the tribe doesn't fulfill what they need to do. Okay? The role of the tribe is to witness what happens to honor with storytelling, to offer cleansing, and then to offer unconditional forgiveness, and the tribe taking over responsibility for what happened in war. I don't mean this on an individual level. I want to be very clear there. It's not that I say it is my personal fault. But we have to see this on a grander picture, bigger picture. There is a group of soldiers or troops or warriors that are sent by their tribe to go to war. And the tribe members have to welcome them back, saying, we sent you and we take responsibility for sending you. If this does not happen, and this is a huge trauma after Vietnam, because after Vietnam, the guys were called baby killers. They were spit at. They were shamed. They weren't allowed to speak. I work with so many Vietnam veterans who never, ever talked about what happened because they're so ashamed, and they were shamed into this. These are things that cause for the soul, for their deepest level, to just break away and say, this is not how it's supposed to be. I cannot come home. I cannot return. And it leaves a dark, dark, pitch-black hole in the person. And they never know how to reconnect. Some say, you know, it's almost like my soul is being towed out of me by a tow truck or leaving me now walking next to me. I'm not connected. I know it's there, but I don't know how to return home. And this is the situation that you're dealing with when you are, or, you know, one aspect of the situation you're dealing with when you're working with a soldier who has developed symptoms over time or right after. The way we treat them is so incredibly important. The way we relate is so incredibly important. I don't know if you're aware that there's hardly any PTSD known in Vietnam, even though they had a multitude of casualties and an absolutely horrific war happening right in their own country. But they did something to prevent this from happening. And again, we're going to have more classes. There are going to be more TILA classes and webinars and other things where we talk about this in depth. But if you walk away from this class today only understanding this part, I think your way to work with soldiers will already change. It will already be transformed. You will already allow them to relate to the work and to the possibilities and the righteousness of healing in a different way. Does that make sense? I would love to get your feedback really quick. Anybody wants to leave a comment?
Yeah, Steve, San Diego, I don't want to be the only one to do the talking here, you know?
Right. and Steve, you and I talked, when was it, yesterday? A couple of days ago?
A couple of days ago.
Yeah.
But this is just bright. Hear me? I'm stuttering again. Doggone it!
I know. Steve, can I make you an offer?
Sure.
I would love to offer you my undivided attention after the call.
Yeah. Okay.
That you and I can really sit down and do some tapping. Would that be okay?
I think it's necessary.
It might be a good idea.
Yeah, I think it's a really good idea. I got your number.
Okay. Then why don't we do that?
Okay, I'll mute up.
All right. Bye. All right, sounds good.
Now, this is Bob Deschner in San Antonio, Texas.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that you did an excellent job describing the type of behaviors that we observe working with veterans here in Austin and San Antonio. They're reluctant to share you have to build up that trust. Once you have that trust, and the way we really start out with that is having other veterans refer us. So usually if another veteran will do it, of course, you got to break through and have the first veteran to be able to handle that.
Yes.
But we've gotten some excellent success, and as soon as you can start demonstrating success, the better. We do an all-day training called Vet Trip, and the first thing we do after we do the initial paperwork is do tapping with the idea that we don't want to open up any boxes. We just do it for stress relief, relaxation, and possibly better sleep. But by releasing the attachments and the charges, they can go throughout the day and have massage and acupuncture and other modalities without having upsets. At least we didn't have any upsets the whole time we were doing this.
Excellent, Bob. Wonderful. That is so good to hear. And yeah, I can confirm that all the way through. It is extremely difficult. People send others for us to break through is very difficult. And if we only use EFT in that fashion, if we only did it in helping them prepare to get through the day, that by itself already is a huge service. And
the other thing I'd like to mention is with these veterans, we had Vietnam veterans as well as OIF, OEF, you know, Iraqi and Afghanistani vets.
Mm-hmm.
They really need somebody to talk it through. And if we're in a group setting and all they're doing is tapping and saying the thing, or they're helping somebody else get relief by doing it in a group setting, they really want somebody to talk to afterwards. They still need the counselor. So we work very closely with the VA every time we can so that they can have a counseling session after our sessions
That's wonderful.
They can have some good cognitive behavior therapy and these other things to help process. If we have a one-on-one session, if Dottie does a one-on-one session with them, she's able to get a lot of that through. But if we're doing group settings, it's almost critical to have the support of a counselor or a psychologist and have that integrated.
And, you know, I so appreciate you for saying that. Now, obviously, in my experience, EFT is the fastest way to get somebody out of a traumatic memory. I always tell my guys, for me, it's not important why you're hurting, but that you're hurting. Not why you're angry, but that you're angry. We focus on your anger, not what makes you angry. Obviously, it helps to know. But if they don't want to tell me, then we just say, even though I'm furious about this, even though I'm so angry about this, and by me suggesting this, it feels as if I knew what this is, even though I don't. And so we can work even if they don't want to share, we can use language that is very, very specific for them and whatever's going on in their mind without them having to tell me what's going on. I have seen EFT in our research. We have a double-blind study out there with two out there that six sessions of EFT usually gets somebody below the PTSD threshold, which is huge. That's just unheard of. And we have seen cortisol changes and cortisol drops and all these things after EFT. So I just want to say that. But what I think is even more important is that you said that you don't use EFT for deep trauma work in group sessions. And I would so second that. I would never do that. I would never work in a group session with veterans that I don't know. I don't know what triggers them. I don't know what they've been through. And even if I do, I always only know a part of the story. And expose them to each other's trauma, expose them to each other's triggers, and to the stress of being in a situation like that, I would be way too nervous that somebody goes off the deep end. In a relaxation session, depending on who it is, I would make a judgment call and see if it works. But for deep trauma, we're saying we want to do a borrowing benefits technique, borrowing benefits, and everybody in the room will heal. I personally would be extremely careful with that. So I appreciate you for saying that. And I just wanted to mention, we have actually covered quite a bit of things here that I wanted to talk about. One of them is, just so that you get the idea, when you work with a veteran, you literally go into a war zone in their mind with them. That makes you a war buddy. They are trained to never be alone, to always buddy each other up. You become a buddy. You say, okay, wherever you go, I'm going with you, and I'm going to get you out of this, and I don't care how we do this, so to speak, which means our job is to stay with them, and to, it doesn't matter what it takes, let's get them out of this, let's get them back to safe ground. We cannot let them down. And that's, I think, where in my fashion as a coach, I can set up my sessions like that. I can know, okay, I have a new vet, I take 2 hours, and that's fine. I know that in a VA setting, this might be more complicated, or other settings where the time structure is different. But oftentimes, that's really what they need, just to know they're safe, I'm not going to cut them off, and that can be extremely helpful for them. One thing that is important to talk about is the symptom of numbness. And I had a wonderful conversation just before this conference call tonight with somebody who really, a Vietnam veteran, really explained this to me, and also what happens in the brain and what fires and all these things. And I'm going to share more about this at another point. But numbness doesn't mean neutral. When somebody says, when you ask somebody, they can so trick you, when you ask somebody, so how do you feel about this? They say, oh, I feel nothing. As an EFT practitioner, it's very easy to jump up and down and say, oh, that's so cool, it worked. Okay? There is a difference between being numb, meaning completely emotionally shut down, and feeling neutral, which means having the reaction that you have hearing the story. Our goal, or our an emotional goal could be that the person releases the stress, releases the feeling they have to protect themselves from the memory, and doesn't have the numbness anymore, and really can shift whatever they're suffering from to a different place in their mind and in their complete being. That's really important because it's so easy to misunderstand. There is one thing that I want to share with you that I tell all of my guys right in the beginning, and if you want to write it down or copy it from my website, go for it. And that is, with EFT, we don't judge, we don't condone, and we don't excuse what happened. We help heal what happened or get rid of what happened. We don't judge, we don't condone, and we don't excuse what happened. So whatever happened, it happened. My job is not to have an opinion about it. My job is not to find out who was right or wrong. My job is not to say you shouldn't have done this or, you know, whatever. The only reason why I'm in the session with you is because I want to help you heal that. You didn't send yourself. You were sent to be there. And my job is just to get you out of it. And the fear of judgment for many of these guys is so phenomenal that they will immediately shut up if they feel judged. Okay, so that's really something. And another thing that is just important is that we're always authentic. You know, in my case, they know my story. They know I'm not, even though I have some experience, they know that I'm very clear on where that ends. And I tell them when they say, you don't understand me. I mean, how can anybody understand? I completely agree with that. Of course I can't. Tell me about it. Tell me more. You know, that's true. And they are very annoyed with people who say, oh, yeah, I know exactly how I feel because my brother, and then they tell them all about somebody else. Veterans don't compare scars. They don't want to be compared to somebody else. It's disrespectful, it's hurtful, and they will not talk to you, probably, unless you have great rapport. You know, when they feel that they're being compared and they have to protect themselves, they really don't want to have to explain themselves. What I see over and over is that when they tell me a story, they oftentimes start in the middle. And they assume I know everything else. And when they talk to each other, that's true. For me, it's not always true. I still, I listen, I take as many notes as I possibly can, and then I check back in to fill the blanks. It's just the way they think. They assume you know a part. They don't want to have to explain everything else. And knowing that is very, very helpful because, you know, it allows for a nice, respectful conversation and a nice, respectful way of having rapport. I'm going to go a little bit over in time. I really want to share this one with you. Unless somebody has a question, I want to talk with you about for a moment. And again, I'm just to make that announcement, there are going to be tailor classes and webinars that are going much more in depth. I got your feedback. I know what you're interested in. And I'm going to offer level 1 and 2 classes and EFT for Vets classes. So we have the time to really go deep into this. But I want to talk about some good ways to start a session or to start, have a conversation and some issues and also some physical stuff. Does anybody have a question before I do that? Okay. One way to get started, I think, Caitlin, you asked this as well. A good way to create rapport is when we say that we have often seen that the person sleeps better. Everybody has insomnia. I have yet to see somebody who doesn't have insomnia, who sleeps just very relaxed, wakes up in the morning, and the world is peachy. It just doesn't happen that way. And they all suffer. And getting rid of insomnia is a desirable outcome. And if that weird tapping thing can do that for them, just take the charge out of the nightmares, whatever it is, and can help them sleep again, that is something that they would really like to experience. That is much easier to sell, so to speak, than to say, you know, we can work through all of your traumatic memories. But they might not want that.
Anna from Denmark.
Hi. Can you mute yourself by pressing four star, please? So when you tell them, you know, there's a good chance that you sleep better, that's a great way in. And I always ask my guys, how do you want to feel about this when we're done tapping? Given that it happened, remember, I'm a coach, okay? So coaches are goal-oriented people. What is important for them is that whatever happened in their past, they have a way to look at and live with that they choose. They can choose if they want to feel guilty for the death of their body, or if they realize that feeling guilty for the death of their body is actually one way of honoring him. And so they want to honor this person without feeling the guilt so that they can actually talk about him. Those are different things. So they might tell you, you know, I just want to be at peace. I don't even want to think about it. I want to be relaxed. Or I just want to be able to honor him or whatever it is. And then you have something to work with. And you can make a choice. We will talk in the other classes, we will talk about how to make really choices, help them find choices that just hit home. And that leave the space open that they need to begin to create a vision of a future that they might have once they release this trauma, because a part of their symptoms is that they don't have a vision for the future. They can't see themselves in the future. So you phrase these things in a creative and kind and open way that seems to be so specific that it becomes desirable, and you're going to do them a huge service. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes.
Anybody have a question about that?
Patricia Bryce.
Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
And so, you know, another thing that is that I like to start with, so we have the insomnia, we have physical symptoms. When you start working with physical symptoms, you might want to stay away from, number one, pain that is literally a medical pain. Not because, or symptoms, okay? So if somebody has, you know, very strong medical limitations, you don't want to start with this because you want to set an example of what EFT can do by working on something that can be released, okay? I have seen phenomenal improvements, even with somebody with a very severe traumatic brain injury, over the phone. The man was able, in just a few rounds of tapping, to take a pen and put it in the center of a post-it note, whereas before he was probably a good 20 inches off, just by doing the tapping. The reason I recommend to not do that at first is because you can't guarantee, or you can't feel safe. You can never guarantee something, but the risk that it takes more work is higher than when you work with something that might be stress-induced, that might be fear or sadness or emotionally induced. Okay, so if they have tension in their back or, you know, tension in their chest or something else like that, start with this, because then they have a way of feeling in their physical body that something is happening and they don't know why, but they can't deny it. And then you can use that to build a bridge into other things. Because then when you do that, oh, and before I say that, the other thing you want to stay away from, not because it doesn't work, but because you can't guarantee it, is tinnitus. And I don't know why, but it has a tendency oftentimes to really go down, stay away for a while, and for some reason or another, it does come back sometimes. And that's one of those very few things that we don't want to put our, you know, all our belongings on the table for. So just to give you an idea, and then you can actually go ahead and say, look, now you have this range of motion back. How do you feel? And they will tell you, well, I feel more relaxed. And then you can point out, well, that's relaxation. That's actually emotional. Relaxation is not physical. Relaxation is emotional. So what do you think this is? And they say, well, I think it's cool. And you just can tell them, you know, and that is a shift in your beliefs. Okay, so here we are. We're doing something really strange by tapping on, you know, attention that you have. And you have three reactions. You have a physical one, an emotional one, and a cognitive one. Could it be that it could be that easy? And then you can work with that rapport and kind of inch your way in so they realize something here is happening all of these things are connected, and it could very well be that my memories, if my memories can relax when I relax physically, it could also be that when I relax my memories, my physical body gets better. It could work the other way around as well. So this is a very, again, a very kind, gentle, and a safe way to just work on the physical body and take it from there. And the third thing, anybody have questions about this? Okay, if you want to work on an emotional level, okay, and you will get to that point, and then we talk about how to stay on the outside, and then we just close it here and work with other things. But I think you get the idea where you come from when you do this work. I want to just give you the suggestion that anger and rage stems from a deep sense of betrayal of that which is right. And remember how we talked about the archetypal warrior and how betrayal of that which is right is causing them to separate on that deep level, to not be able to finish that rite of passage. I would be willing to tell you that when you have a warrior that is raging, that is so very angry, that when you tell this person that he feels cheated or she feels cheated or treated unfairly or has experienced something very frustrating, for some people the word frustrating is better, or feels very betrayed, that this hits home big time. The reason I would suggest that this might be a good starting point is because you can confirm that they're right. Okay. Betrayal should not happen. Betrayal of what is right shouldn't happen. If somebody cheated them, this is not fair. You can make a huge step, go right on their side and say, you know what, you're absolutely right. They sucked. They should have never done this. Let's tap on that. You know, because you shouldn't have to be so upset on top of that. This is 40 years ago. And on top of all that they did to you, you also have to suffer from this. Then you can separate it and you can acknowledge that in the present time you can change things. And you can release this. You don't have to make a wrong thing right. So when you acknowledge the anger, acknowledge the rage, you show no fear, but compassion and understanding. That goes a really, really long way. And in that context, I think it's important to mention that the word I'm sorry goes a long way as well. When the guys tell me, you know, and they're usually very, very short. We Facebook as well, and then you get these little instant messages and things like that. And when they say, you know, it's just today is just an anniversary, and you just send back and say, I'm sorry. And then they send back, that's okay. And then you just send back, and I want to let you know, I'm really sorry. This should not have happened. That's an amazing and a very personal way of taking charge, taking on your own place, getting across that you're not going to overstep, you're not going to change anything, but you're here to acknowledge. And remember, the role of the tribe is to witness, allow for storytelling, allow for cleansing, and to take responsibility away from the person. And sometimes it's just a few words that you can put into your setup statements or into the phrasing that you're going to use together that can make all the difference in the world when you do that. It is absolutely phenomenal to watch. And just for, you know, when I realized that witnessing, storytelling, and cleansing is really a traditional way of the tribe to welcome a warrior home, I thought this is exactly what we do with EFT. Witnessing, storytelling, cleansing. That's exactly what we do. And that's one reason why I believe that EFT is such a profoundly appropriate tool to work with a warrior, to work with a veteran, or to work with an active duty, with active duty personnel, even though that might be for many, many different reasons that we don't have time for today, might be difficult to do on some level. We haven't talked, or we are going to talk, in the, as I said, I'm going to offer more classes that I would love for you to attend, because we're going to go into things like, working with guilt and grief, specific things, dealing with overwhelm and helplessness, using the different techniques in a creative way. Those of you who are familiar with EFT, there are ways of really working from the outside in very, very gently, while you always address the core without the person actually reacting to the core. And getting somebody out of the tunnel with a set of statements that you use, and then put them down so they know this is what it's like here, and then you go back in and get them back out again, go back in, get them back out again, until they get so familiar what it's like to be outside of the tunnel that the process really begins to speed up. Last thing, please never underestimate the trauma of childhood trauma. A lot of veterans, a lot of troops have parents that were in the military, and you want to check for that. If you understand the warrior that's in front of you, you understand what his or her father or mother has been through and what that education upbringing must have been like. And there is, it will allow you to see a lot of cleansing that needs to be done, a lot of healing that needs to be done, and can also help them build a bridge to their parents. But childhood trauma is really not like a separated condition. It is a part of that, even though it's, they like to see it that way, but, it's the person that's sitting in front of you, they come in with everything. And for them, it's kind of all of that in a huge big bag, and they ask you to help them heal. Oftentimes, a certain trauma that they experience in war is so traumatic for them because they were conditioned as kids, they were disrespected as kids, or they were hurt as kids. And then here they come and they think that, their military family now is a family and everybody treats each other with respect and honor, and they see so much pride in that. And then, bang, it happens again, and the elders betray them, and the chain of command lets them down or ridicules them or whatever else happens. So really see these things in context. If they bring it out, it's important enough to tap on. And with EFT, it's so easy to tap that it really is always worth the while. I'm here for your questions, and then I would like just to offer one round of tapping in the end so that you can get a sense of where we come from when we do this work, actively tapping. I would love to hear your feedback. If you want to press 4-star, then you can unmute yourself and I can learn a little bit more. Does anybody want to say something or have a question?
Hi, Ingrid. It's Caitlin Williams again.
Yes, Caitlin.
I just wanted to thank you for this presentation, because it really it just helps enormously, and I can tell how much more I need to learn. But it feels like I got a beginning of some really core, really important points about the work. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you. I'm glad that you feel that way, because I think that's, if we don't have that idea of where we're going, it's just difficult for them to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
And you just obviously do just amazing work. Let me know how I can support you.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anybody else would like to say something before I just want to give you a statement that I almost routinely use, and it's usually very helpful. Okay. You will be dealing a lot. You are already dealing a lot with overwhelm. People are overwhelmed. And when they sit there and they're quiet and they wait for you to take over and take charge and tell them what to do, basically, and that happens a lot, especially with the younger guys, and kind of test you if you know your stuff, you can just get started and just start tapping on the karate chop point. It's okay, just tap here on the side of my hand, and then you tell me where the point is. And you tap on, even though I feel completely overwhelmed right now, I choose to be surprisingly okay with that. Even though I'm completely overwhelmed right now, I choose to be surprisingly okay with that. even though I'm completely overwhelmed right now, I choose to be surprisingly okay with that. And you just tap on the overwhelm. And what this statement does, this is really, this works in so many directions in time and personality and all different things. Acknowledging overwhelm without any judgment whatsoever, it's kind of like, and I actually usually start with, of course I'm overwhelmed. This is stupid. I don't know anything about this. Yeah. You know, just, it's crazy. Why am I tapping? I don't want to do this, but here I am doing foolish things. I might as well admit it's crazy. Whatever. So you kind of play with that. But then when you say, when you use the word surprising in your setup statements, that allows for them subconsciously to open up to solutions they don't have to know yet. Okay, and that's exactly where you want them to be when you start introducing EFT, because this is something they don't know yet, and they want to be in a state of being able to receive that information. So I choose puts them in a place of power. Okay, so I usually stop after the word I choose so that they can say I choose by themselves and then put it into a long sentence. I choose. They say, well, I can choose anything I want. All right, to be surprisingly okay with that. Being okay with it, even though it happens, is a very confusing thought. And when you throw the word surprising into the mix, it creates a reality of something here is happening. If that was the outcome, then I could be okay with that. Okay isn't judgmental. Okay isn't, there's no scale to being okay. You can't be okayer than okay. You can be surprisingly okay, which means it can be different in... everything can remain the same. The only thing that changes is that you feel okay now. So you really open up a nice solid foundation or plant a nice solid foundation that is respectful, that is kind, that doesn't open up a can of worms, that actually closes a can of worms should somebody come in with one, and just allows for communication to happen. So I want to give that to you. I am going to send out very shortly different announcements for classes. I want those of you who want a level one to be able to have access to that content and that information. I'm going to train people online in webinars so that you can really get deep into that and understand how this works, why it works, the history of all of it. We do the level two where we teach the techniques, the different techniques, and how to apply them. And the level three is really an advanced form, and I want to expand a lot more on this work with veterans, so that you feel solid and comfortable reaching out and helping others. This is it from my side for right now. You know where to find me. My website is eftforvets.com. My email address is ingrid@eftforvets.com. You can leave comments on the website. You can leave remarks about what you would like to learn or what you would like to know. Connections that are there. There's some books that are highly, highly recommended. Edward Tick, War and the Soul being one of them. He taught me a great deal about the archetype of the warrior. He is an amazing person that I'm very grateful for. And please watch out for those emails and sign up for some of those classes if that feels the right thing for you. If there's anything you would like to say, I'm... Hello? Yes, somebody just wanted...
I don't really have anything to say. I just wanted to unmute myself at the end.
Okay. And who is this?
This is Eva Lynn. I've been very interested in listening to this. I don't have any background in EFT, but I do have background working with veterans on military posts. Actually, not veterans. They're active duty.
Yes. So it might be very helpful to go to the site, watch the video. There are free resources there so you can see what this is about, and then you can see how you can implement that into your work.
Yes,
I want to make it the work for you easier as well, because you don't have to take everything on that you're hearing.
Right.
And I know you're exposed to more than anybody should be exposed to. So it's an
extremely... But as much as they are, but yes.
Yeah, but consistently and from all different angles, and you have to hold the base for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big deal. So I'm grateful you're on the call, Evelyn. Please email me, and then we can connect.
Have you done this with family members also?
Yes.
Okay. Because they're traumatized in another way.
Yes, they are. And the family members are in a very unique situation because they also don't want to talk. And they, because they don't want to risk their spouse's career, they don't trust outside people either. But they are going through, I'm a team leader for the disaster behavioral health response. So we deploy to military events when troops come back or before they deploy or, you know, we're called in for support groups, things like that. So I've done quite a bit there. And, you know, on top of that, they never get out of the state of worry because they simply don't know. Their loved one knows they either safe or they're not, even though they can change. But they always have to assume he or she's not safe. And they have to deal with the kids. They have to deal with multiple. We haven't even started to talk about multiple deployments. And the differences between the war, of course, and the trauma that they have and the different things and all of this. There's so much to talk about. But you're absolutely right. And if you can offer EFT to a family member, and he or she can then offer this to the kids, and they work with each other, probably using a teddy bear, which is a fantastic tool for them. Mm-hmm. You're doing them a huge service.
Well, thank you, and I certainly will go to this your website and be looking more into this. I really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad you were here. Thank you.
Me too. Thanks.
Okay, if nobody else has a question or a comment, I would like to close the call for today. Again, my name is Ingrid Dinter. www.eftforvets.com is the website. You can always email me at ingrid@eftforvets.com. I'm very much looking forward to hearing from you, and please stay on the outlook for the classes that are coming up, because I think they will really be beneficial to many of you and really help you feel solid and comfortable in this great technique.
Thank you, Ingrid.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.